All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Greg Jennings sitting in for that dude, Marcellus Wiley. All right, coming up, we'll tell you if Sean Payton is jealous of Sean McVay. But we start today with the Cleveland Browns. You ever see the movie Love and Basketball? It's about this young couple, Quincy and Monica. Basketball is their bond. They fall for each other at 11 years old on a basketball court. They grow up to become high school basketball stars. Monica struggles to control her emotions on the court. Quincy is destined for NBA stardom. They both receive scholarships to play at USC. They spoke it into existence. Quincy and Monica are the basketball version of Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry. The 2019 Cleveland Browns are love and football.
I feel like we spoke this into existence almost. Like him and I dreamed of this. You know, this is something we talked about at 17. You know, I'm gonna live right down the street from you. We're gonna be on the same team. Everything, like, and it's like surreal.
Stop it.
Before, you know, maybe a little bit before everybody that, you know, the trade had went through, and I mean, I just cried. I called him. I talked to John. I cried with John. cried with Freddie.
Here we go. This is better than Love and Basketball. This kind of reminds me of Oscar winner Green Book. Browns head coach Freddie Kitchen's first words to Odell were, "I love you."
Gave him a hug too. He said he loved me. It's like a love story.
This. The movie. Love and Basketball meets Green Book meets Any Given Sunday. Love Book Sunday. Nike's already made the trailer for the movie. The only problem with all of this is football isn't a movie. No one is in control of the script. A happy ending isn't guaranteed. In fact, love stories with sad endings are oftentimes more popular than love stories with happy endings. Ever heard of Romeo and Juliet? It's a classic by a guy named Shakespeare. I mean, we're talking about Cleveland. LeBron came back, won a championship, and then promptly left for Los Angeles. I mean, the Browns do have a first-time head coach. They have an undersized quarterback with a boulder on his shoulder. And they have two number one receivers who both want the ball all the time. And one of those receivers is pure diva. Things can get ugly quick in Cleveland. Lake Erie is filled with icebergs by December. Odell and Jarvis could be Jack and Rose sinking on the Titanic. You don't really believe all that garbage Odell was spewing yesterday.
I mean, at the end of the day, I know where I'm at in life. I don't need to be in New York. I don't need to be in LA. I could be in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. It doesn't matter where I'm at. It never really crossed my mind, like, oh, going to Cleveland or worrying about marketing or worrying about any of that. I care about football. I care about winning. Like all the extra, I didn't step into this game to be famous. I didn't, you know, that's just what fell into my lap.
Oh boy, get your popcorn ready. Love and football being rolled out as a love story. It'll be a dysfunctional reality TV show by the end of the year. All right, joining the desk now, our Fox Sports analyst Reggie Bush and former Pro Bowl wide receiver TJ Hootsmanzada. Greg, I'll start with you. Throw some popcorn your way.
Man.
Will Odell be happy in Cleveland?
Before I answer the question, this might have been your best Whitlock.
Yeah, this might have been the best one.
This was good. Funny. I like this
one. Put some thought into that one.
But yes, Odell Beckham is going to be happy. And the reason why is because of those guys that were at the presser with him. Mm. Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham. When you formulate a relationship that is off the field and it's real, mm-hmm. that translates to what you're going to get on the field. These aren't two guys that are going to compete and hate each other in competition. They're going to thrive and feed off of one another in competition. It's going to be healthy. They're going to hold each other accountable. This is what they've always done. This is what they want.
And
they're
going to.
I am a movie buff.
All right. You ever seen New Jack City?
I have
Brown
seen.
And they grew up together.
Yeah. It was, but you were alluding to Love and Basketball. How did that end?
Love and Basketball ended well.
Okay.
For Monica. Old boy tore up his ACL.
I mean, he still got what he wanted. He had the family and all of that. But I think Odell is going to embrace this because of the personalities that are around him. He's going to have fun again. In New York, it wasn't fun anymore because he was getting all the attention and they were losing. Yep. Now he's going to share that platform with guys who he's going to love going to work with every day.
Yeah, and this is about legacy too, right? I really truly believe that this move feels very similar because I ran into Odell a couple of days ago and we had this discussion. I told him, I said, this move feels a lot like my first year in New Orleans, like the significance and the magnitude that we had in front of us to impact the community, impact the organization. Teams do not view the New Orleans Saints the same way that they used to before our generation got there. And I truly feel like Odell and the rest of the guys on this team have that same opportunity in front of them to make an impact and to leave a legacy so that your kids' kids will get free meals. If he wins a Super Bowl in Cleveland, winning a Super Bowl in Cleveland is different than winning a Super Bowl for the New York Giants because they've done it before. They've been there, done that before. But you win a Super Bowl in Cleveland with one of the most dedicated fan bases who are starving for wins. We're not even talking about playoffs. They starving for wins over there. And now you have a team, maybe the best team that they've ever had on paper, that has ability to go to the playoffs and deep into the playoffs, possibly a Super Bowl. That is about legacy. And I love the press conference. I love seeing that there were no coaches. There were no GMs. It was just all about the players. Because at the end of the day, the players are the ones that are going to have to make this thing work. But on top of that, the head coach, Freddie Kitchens, being his first time, he had a lot on his plate. Because now he's going to have the command and respect all those guys in that locker room when he walks in there. He's no longer that running back coach or the quarterback's coach or the OC. Now you have to create a culture such that it allows Odell. Guys. With Odell, allows guys to go out and to blossom.
Odell, cash money, bro.
It remains to be seen. Is he happy? Of course he's happy now. We ain't played a game yet. You should be happy. And so the key is going to be, when September rolls around and these games start, he better get his targets.
Yep.
And it's not so much, if you look at it, Jarvis Landry is going to be the one making an adjustment. He's one of the most targeted receivers in the league since he's come into the league. Mm-hmm. Odell isn't. So Jarvis Landry is going to be the one that's going to have to make an adjustment and say, I'm going to get less balls. And the problem is, you're a little older. They both want to eat. You can say, oh, we best friends. We went to college together. I want to see you do well. But I want to do well as well.
Of course.
And so,
I want to do better, I think.
I don't care who does better, because if you're doing well and I'm doing well, it don't matter. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you're doing. As long as I get to my expectations, I can care less what the next guy's doing. Freddie, this is all on Freddie Kitchens.
Yep.
100%. He's going to have to navigate through this and manage egos and personalities more so than managing the game.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield, being the quarterback he is, his personality will help. But, yeah, he's happy now.
Let me ask you this, TJ, because you played with Chad Johnson. If Chad Johnson, they had brought in another number one receiver, would Chad have been happy?
More than likely, yes, because they weren't going to be better than Chad. Chad was that good.
Yeah.
They weren't going to be better than Chad. So you bring him in, Chad is still better than him.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham is a better receiver complete than but Jarvis Landry can play.
Yeah. To this point that you're getting to, their skill sets are different.
Yeah, they are.
Like, they're different. You have Odell Beckham who can stretch the field, who's a game breaker at any moment. Mm-hmm. Jarvis Landry, is he a game breaker? Yes, but the way he breaks the game open is a lot different than Odell Beckham. He's not blowing the top off of defenses. Their style of play, it complements one another. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's going to be this pull for what he's getting, I want. What he's getting, I want. No, because their styles of play, they offer you different things.
See, the only thing that will be different is Odell can actually get in the slot and do what Jarvis does.
Yeah.
He can actually do that if they ask him to.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of, if he's not getting any looks, okay, you're going to have certain formations that Odell and Jarvis will switch. Okay, we're going to try to get Odell this ball because he hadn't getting any looks. And so that normally would go to Jarvis. You know, we call I right X.
Yeah.
That let the X knows me and Chad will switch.
Yep.
And so as long as they get their looks, but then, dude, we talking about Njoku, he going to want the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Callaway can play.
Mm-hmm.
Kareem Hunt after the 8-game suspension. Yeah. Chubb, they Duke have Johnson. So many guys that.
And a first-time head coach. Yeah.
All of this sounds good. The one thing that will eliminate everything we're talking about it as being potential is winning.
You win the ball, you we all have it.
Nobody cares who's care eating. You, I still.
We've never seen Odell upset while winning.
I'm just. I'm,
how what, often has New York won?
Yes, that's my recently. Point. He was. It's unhappy because you're not winning, and I'm the focal point. And I got a quarterback that's struggling to even get me the ball when I'm open. And I'm doing my job.
This is the thing, guys. Odell knows a narrative that's being talked about. He's not a fool. He's not a dumb person at all. Mm-hmm. He knows a narrative. If they're winning and he acts crazy, it's a wrap for him.
Yeah.
He's not going to – and if he does act crazy, he's going to do it privately, behind closed doors. He's not going to publicly get out there and act crazy because he's not getting the ball if they're winning games. He's not going
to
do it.
To that point, this is where – I know what Odell, the receiver, can give me, but I want to see if Odell really understands that he can be just as effective without the football in his hands. Jarvis Landry is going to have to understand that. Nick Chubb, everybody else is going to have to be unselfish in this offense because the selfish side of it is going to tear this team apart really quick. The only way this thing can work is if everybody takes a step back and understands it's not about me anymore. It's about the team because we got a lot of guys on this offense that can play.
Reggie, you mentioned New Orleans and Sean Payton, mm-hmm. a more experienced coach. And he wasn't that experienced when you got there.
Yeah, it was first time as a head coach when I got there.
But it wasn't his first year.
It wasn't his first year coaching.
Yeah, it wasn't his first year. This is Freddie Kitchens' first year as the head coach. I'm worried about the expectations now for Cleveland. This has been a franchise with no expectations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now everybody's picking them to win the AFC mm-hmm. North. There will be disappointment if they don't win 9 or 10, 11 games. How will they handle the expectations?
Ooh, how will they handle it? Well, that remains to be seen. If I'm Freddie Kitchens, I'm leaning on other coaches who have had to go through this for a first time, right? Like a Sean Payton, like a Sean McVay. Because when we first got through that first year, there were a lot of questions. The same questions that people are having now about the Cleveland Browns, we had those same questions, you know, my first year there as well. And Sean Payton did a great job at putting that team together. Now, we still had our struggles and our ups and downs, but we didn't have any off-the-field issues. We didn't have anybody in the locker room with any kind of personalities like an Odell or Jarvis.
But how'd you guys do that for your rookie year?
We went 10-6 and we was one game away from the Super Bowl.
And winning cures everything.
And so to me, if I'm Freddie Kitchens, I gotta go talk to some other guys. Like, hey, how did you do it? How did you handle this thing your first year? Because you can never get enough intel. You can never lean on enough guys for experience. There are a ton of coaches out there who've done this, been there, done that before. You have to put your pride aside and rely on them.
Expectations make them or break them?
I think it's going to make them. And simply because everybody's unsure, and I personally can't speak for everybody. I'm going to speak for myself. I'm unsure can they meet expectations? Because at the end of the day, it's about the players. Mm-hmm. Like, you talk about Freddie Kitchens, and I think he's been coaching long enough, not as a head coach, but he understands how to put together a game plan, what players need to be successful. Can they execute it, and can they put pride aside, mm-hmm. ego aside, because mm-hmm. there are so many playmakers mm-hmm. defensively, offensively, on both sides of the ball. Can we work as a team?
Yeah.
It's not an individual game anymore. Yes, the better the team does, the more accolades every individual player mm-hmm. gets. That's what's to be seen, because all of these players that we're talking about, as great a personalities as they have on the football field, none of them have ever won.
Yeah.
None of them have ever won. So they're going to do this together, and they're going to have some growing pains.
Yeah.
Expectations, will they be able to handle it? I say yes, and the reason I say that is this. When Hugh got fired after week 8, Baker Mayfield went 5-3. And this, we put it on Freddie Kitchens. Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield, it's on both of those guys.
Yeah, it is.
He went 5-3, completed 68% of his passes. And now you bring in one of the best receivers in the league that can get open in one-on-one. He can beat you down the field. He can stop on a dime and run around. That's only going to make him better. Now, everybody is going to want to play Cleveland. They're going to get a lot of primetime games. Mm-hmm. We know when you're playing on Monday night or Sunday night as a player, you're really ready to play.
Yeah.
So those expectations of being the only game on TV, guys is going to be really ready to play. And so for me, I like it. If they don't win 10 games, for me, it's a disappointment.
I agree.
Because they have talent up and down, and their quarterback, he just has his confidence about him that he just refuses to let his team be bad.
Yeah. What I like about this team, really quick, is that the personnel that John Dorsey has put together, they don't back down from the spotlight. They all get better when the light is the brightest.
Yeah. Neither did Chad Johnson. He never won in the postseason.
Aww.
Hey, guys. Jason Whitlock here. Thank you for listening to the Speak for Yourself podcast. If you like what you hear, then you should take a minute to check out the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast hosted by The Herd's very own Joy Taylor. On the Maybe I'm Crazy podcast, you'll tap into a different take on the world of sports. Joy will break down all the biggest stories from the NFL, NBA, culture, in and out of sports, and everything in between. So subscribe now for a weekly episode of Maybe I'm Crazy every Tuesday night on your favorite podcast platform. Now back to the show. Let's move to a big story about the AAF, which launched back in February, but reportedly is already on the verge of collapse. The league expected to suspend operations as early as today. Mm. The league was troubled from the start with Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon investing $250 million in the league after it nearly missed payroll back in February. And just last week, Dundon said the league needed help from the NFLPA to avoid collapse. All right, the question here is this a bad sign for the XFL? And I say no, just because this is not Vince McMahon's first bite at the apple. Mm. This is his second go around with the XFL. When the AAF started this year in February, I was shocked. I was like, damn, I thought that was a year away. I didn't, and so it just kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't think they let the gestation period go long enough, that process to start in the league. I thought they came in too quick. The XFL, I think, is going to come in with a much stronger foundation and plan, and obviously owner of the league, commissioner of the league, who's got a lot of money, and this is his second bite at the apple. I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't think this is a bad look for or a sign for the XFL, simply because they're going to be in competition with the NFL. They're not going to be in collaboration with the NFL. And that's the difference. When you, the AAF, what they were looking to do were to get practice squad guys to sign on and play in this league, mm-hmm. which then it gives them more time on the field. Guys are possibly going to get hurt. Nobody wants to do that. Mm-hmm. And so they couldn't acquire the talent from the National Football League that would interest or gain the interest of their fans and the league fans to watch and to draw the eyes. The XFL is going to be completely different. I'm in competition with you. I'm trying to get guys straight out of high school. If you want to play and you want to make a name for yourself, mm-hmm. come join our league. Their strategic mentality and approach is going to be completely different from the National Football League. So I don't think this is going to be a bad sign for the XFL at all.
Well, I'll say this. I am so glad I did not make that investment, because I had an opportunity to invest in one of these teams, and I would be mad as hell right now if my $5 million or whatever it is I put in this is just gone down the drain. But I feel like this is a missed opportunity for the NFL, because I feel like by the NFL really getting behind this AAF league, they have an opportunity to really grow the NFL brand overall, right? Because when you think about a lot of these guys that are playing in this league, these are a lot of guys that either played in the NFL already and are trying to get back into the league. There's so many feel-good stories that can come from that, right? And times are changing, right? The way we intake content is just completely different, right? So, you know, for the NFL, they've built a multi-billion dollar brand off of this one kind of singular focused mentality, right? And when you look at like the Super Bowl, like people don't want to watch 30 commercials during Super Bowl anymore, right? And so I feel like adding something like this, adding another dimension to the NFL, a minor league, something like that, is only going to grow the brand even bigger. And so I feel like if the NFL really got behind the AAF league, this is only going to make the NFL shield that much more powerful, because now you have this farm league, so to speak. Because I've always felt like the difference between college to the NFL is a significant jump. I mean, the speed at the level which guys play is so much faster that I've always felt like there needs to be some kind of farm league like they have in baseball for these guys to get to that point. But they haven't done that. And so you have this league that really could have you know, benefited, I think, the NFL, and I just feel like it's a missed opportunity. Does this hurt the XFL? I don't think it hurts them, because you said Vince McMahon, it's his second chance at that. But competing against the NFL, I'm not sure that's the smartest play either.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt the XFL. It's what you said. This is Vince McMahon's second chance at it. The mistakes he made last time, he won't make this time. The AAF, the problem with that was you can't expect guys on a practice squad to say, oh, I'm going to lead a practice squad and go, God.
Exactly. When you're, yeah.
Every player in the NFL, practice squad, IR, we all think we're making it.
Yes.
So why would I leave the NFL here and go? And so that was a bad idea from the jump. Mm-hmm. The XFL, they're not going to compete with the NFL. No, everybody knows that. You can say we're competing with the NFL. Nobody's competing with the NFL. The NFL, they don't need feel-good stories. They can make a feel-good story from a player on each team.
The XFL is going to compete against college football. They're going to let guys come straight out of high school into the XFL.
But, Jason, you know what, though? Those top high school players, it's going to take some time for them to get those kids, because they've seen Reggie Bush on TV. Mm-hmm. They've seen now Trevor Lawrence on TV. Those guys are not going to want to play in this. They want to play.
TJ.
For the check.
Money talks.
Okay, how many?
How many players in basketball? We just look at basketball. How many players in high school would jump, make that jump, and forego college
for one year?
My point.
Now, if I could play in the XFL and get paid, I'm going.
I'm going.
But how many kids? Number one, there's not a lot of kids. The college game develops them. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can develop them and work with them, and how much they gonna get paid? You're gonna get certain kids that feel if they're a 5-star recruit, they gonna want more money than the next guy. And so it's gonna be a part where they say, okay, everybody coming
there's
in from high school
guys,
to get
though,
this amount.
TJ, I think that $75,000 a year, $100,000, and they don't have to go to school. They don't have to pretend
exactly.
like they're a student.
100%.
Exactly.
And again, this is where I think Reggie makes a good point about the AAF. The NFL had an opportunity because they're having a struggle developing quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's where I thought the AAF could really help, is let some kids play during the spring at the quarterback position, and they should have tried to work out. I see why they were trying to work out something with the NFLPA to groom some of these backup quarterbacks and develop some of these, because it's much harder to do it in the NFL. But I do think this going straight from high school, I think you're going to catch some kids that will be interested in that because they just don't want to deal with going to school.
Man, these kids going straight from high school. If you 18 and you going to go play against somebody that's 23, 24, and you fresh out of high school, good luck.
Good luck.
I'm telling you.
This ain't basketball. One thing I do know, this is not basketball.
It's not. Adrian Peterson couldn't have done it?
I mean,
you talk about one dude.
That's one guy.
It's a handful.
To Jason's point, the mentality of these guys is, I don't care. I can go do it.
Until you get in there.
Yeah. Until you get in there. They'll be in before they realize
that. And it's traditional football rules. This ain't the let's protect receivers and the quarterback. You saw that quarterback from the AAF get his head took off.
Right.
Literally, yeah, CTE, concussion.
All in one.
Roughing the quarterback. Yeah, all that in one play.
Move to Sean Payton, who got a win this offseason by changing the NFL's replay rules in the wake of the Saints' crushing loss to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. But Payton seems to be a little fixated on the coach who beat him in that game, telling the NFL Network that teams are making a mistake by searching for the next Sean McVay.
I think we've got a diversity problem that's like this season, what took place, that's hitting us in square in the face. And I think that, not a lot was written or discussed about it. And there are a handful of coaches that I know if I was a GM who I would be interested in hiring. So I think more and more it's season by season, and I want Alvin Kamara. Well, you can't have him. Now you can go you can go draft 10 more running backs and be 0-10 trying to find him.
I think Sean Payton has dressed up his real thoughts by using the word diversity to start off. But then as he kept talking, to me, he got to the real issue. Sean McVay is seen as the blueprint for NFL coaches now. And, hey, go get someone that looks like Sean McVay. Go hire his quarterback's coach that had been there for a year. And Sean Payton is sitting there going, me? Sean McVay has jumped ahead of Sean Payton and everybody else in football. I think
actual reason and justification for it. I think he has some jealousy of Sean McVay. I think that drove a lot of his coaching in the Super Bowl. And I think he's fixated on Sean McVay and is basically calling BS on the whole NFL for everybody thinking, like, getting the next Sean McVay is going to cure all your problems. He's calling BS on that.
I disagree. Not only do I not think that he's jealous, but I think that he's actually giving Sean McVay some credit here, saying you can't just go out and hire a coach and think automatically he's going to be able to produce and create and innovate and give you what Sean McVay has done. It's just because you plant the same seeds, you think that everything that comes up from the ground is going to be the same, but it tastes a little different. And so my thing is, when it comes to this in Sean McVay and what he's been able to do, you can't, like Sean Payton said, you can't just go out there and think, because I see it, I can just do it. That's the problem with the National Football League. It's a copycat league.
Yeah.
When I see you do it, you know what? Oh, it worked? Let me go and try to figure out a way that I can do it, but I'll insert my guy and see, I need you to do it like he did it. It doesn't work that way. It's not that easy.
Yeah, and that happens all the time throughout the league, right? Like, I can't tell you how many plays we've stolen from the Philadelphia Eagles or from the Green Bay Packers or from the, you know what I mean? It is a true copycat league, and I think the Arizona Cardinals are a perfect example of that. They are really pushing Cliff Kingsbury as maybe the next Sean McVay. So I think they got kind of caught up
based off
of nothing, right? Looking for the next younger, youthful coach to bring in a new added energy and motivation. And Chip Kelly tried that same thing, and they ran him up out the league real quick. So I do agree with you 100% that it is a copycat league, and you know, guys or organizations or coaches are always trying to find the next thing that looks like the last successful person.
So, do you think Sean McVay is jealous?
Sean Payton? No. I don't think Sean Payton is jealous. No, because once upon a time, Sean Payton was Sean McVay.
Exactly.
I think in Sean Payton's mind, he's like, he still should be. Again, because they're acting like Sean McVay is the next best thing to Bill Belichick.
Right.
And Sean Payton is like, no. I'm the next best thing to Bill Belichick. And if they hadn't cheated me in that NFC Championship game, that's what y'all would be talking about. And you would be hiring guys off of my staff and off of my tree. Again, I'm not even putting this a negative, because I'm critical of Sean Payton and all the whining he did at the NFC Championship. But I actually think he's right here in terms of, I think he's bothered by the Bounty Gate thing defining him. And he's kind of the outlaw coach. And when did we ever go through the whole Sean Payton era where everybody was trying to hire the next Sean Payton? It got destroyed by Bounty Gate and him being seen as the outlaw coach. And that's why I think he's so upset about what happened in that last game he played, getting beat by Sean McVay and the whole league going McVay crazy.
I mean, if you look at it, Sean McVay is an outlier. He's not, you can, I don't mind Arizona hiring Kingsbury.
Because you don't?
I don't mind it, because if it works, they're going to look like geniuses. And if it doesn't, you just fired him. Sean McVay was unqualified when he got hired. But it worked. Yes, he was.
He had more skin in the game.
You say that now because it worked.
He had more skin in the game in the league than
exactly
in the NFL.
Yeah.
Kingsbury failed at Texas Tech. And
you're not getting the type of players at Texas Tech that you can get if he was at an Oklahoma or a Texas.
Everybody wins at Texas Tech. He's the first coach to lose there in 35 years.
And if he loses in the NFL, he's going to get fired. I mean, it's as simple as that. Zach Taylor, the same thing in Cincinnati. There's no difference. And
you done brought up another good one.
And this is the thing. Zach Taylor had multiple head coaching offers. It wasn't just the Bengals. He chose the Bengals.
And that's what McVay is complaining about.
You mean Payton?
Payton. I'm sorry, Payton.
And Payton, you were once Sean McVay.
Yeah.
So don't be mad at something that you were like.
But this is why I don't think he's mad. He's giving him credit.
I believe.
Because he understands how hard it is to actually do that.
You think he's mad?
Yes. And he has every right to be about this. Again, in his mind, he's sitting there going, you know, if they had called that foul, we would have been in the Super Bowl.
Run the ball, they probably would have been in the Super Bowl too.
No question. But I'm talking in his mind.
Right, of course. Of course.
But in his, he's like, and guys on my staff, my quarterback's coach, would have been getting that Bengals job. We got some Zach Taylor, no one had ever heard of him off Sean McVay's staff. Gets this job.
And you know what Zach Taylor was coaching 2 years ago?
Where?
You know what position he had? He was an assistant receiver coach 2 years ago.
So
assistant.
Thank you. And then you got Cliff, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, they literally put it in the Arizona press release. He's friends with Sean McVay. That's part of his qualification. And you can, and so what and again, I'm actually, maybe I shouldn't use the word jealousy, but what Sean McVay is actually doing is standing up for the real coaches in the NFL. He's part of that coaching fraternity. Sean Payton, I keep saying McVay. Sean Payton is standing up for the real coaches.
So
in the
now
NFL.
What happens when Zach Taylor goes to Cincinnati, he does well. Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona, he does. What happens then?
You're a Bengals
it's gonna
fan.
Get, I'm no, not, I'm not, just a realist.
I'm not convinced
if they
do well.
If these coaches do well, then it's like, now what?
Didn't Sean Payton just say, I can't wait to see a couple of these guys?
Hey,
he just said, you
got to show it to me then.
The same way people was chomping at the bit to get to Chip Kelly, it's the same way people are going to be chomping at the bit to get some of these young coaches because they ain't been there and they ain't done it enough before. They don't got enough skin in the game. And the one thing I have an issue with is with the way that they handled the Steve Wilks firing, because you got to give a guy an opportunity, right? Give him a chance to – you can't base a guy's coaching job off of one season, right? Allow him to go through a draft class. So – I'm looking at the direction of the Arizona Cardinals organization, and I got questions from the president to the GM. Like, what are y'all doing over there? Y'all brought Sam Bradford in.
Yeah.
He ain't do nothing.
Right.
But you paid him all this money. So who's making the decisions behind the scenes? Because if this is the culture and environment you are creating for your head coach, nobody's going to be successful there. It don't matter who steps in as a head coach, whether he's young or old. It don't matter who it is.
I think that Sean Payton is justifiably using his position, his platform, to make the media aware, like, why are y'all co-signing for all of this? Why Cliff Kingsbury, and maybe Cliff Kingsbury will catch lightning in a bottle and he'll be successful in the NFL where he wasn't in college football. But there's no reason for the guy who has spent a month as offensive coordinator, a couple of weeks as offensive coordinator at USC, should get that job.
There's no reason
Zach Taylor should get that job.
Yeah.
And Sean Payton is trying to say, like, if y'all really want to have a discussion about who's getting hired in the NFL, mm-hmm. every time we want to reduce it to race, and what he's saying is, could be that, but it could also just be lazy-ass people making decisions mm-hmm. that can't think beyond, oh, Sean McVay just did well. Let's hire someone that's got the same hair.
And it's tough. Arizona, you got to play the Rams twice. You got to play Seattle twice. You got to play San Fran, who should be improved. And then yep. you look at Zach Taylor. They got to play Cleveland, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. So it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy.
I don't want to just – I do know this. There's a lot of NFL coaches, and I say this on firm ground, can't wait to get a piece of Cliff Kingsbury.
Mm-hmm.
No respect. None. That was the
he talk. Better be ready.
That was the talk in Indianapolis at the combine. People can't wait to get a hold of Cliff Kingsbury.
I could definitely see that. I mean, the same could be said.
Hey, what was the last topic we just talked about? It's like them high school kids trying to come in and play with grown men. Can't wait to get a piece of them.
Whitlock and Greg Jennings. Greg sitting there for Marcellus. Marcellus, I got his book out here.
He's
the book. All right, Reggie Bush is back.
What's in that bottle?
Twitter off.
Twitter off.
This is you make any comments built for Twitter, I hit you with the Twitter off.
My name not on the bottle.
All right, yeah. Steven Jackson, NBA champion, joining us now. All right, time for my favorite segment, Antisocial. Darnell Smith back
from
Indianapolis. All right, Darnell, walk us through these Twitter streets.
Yeah, let's get us started with everybody's favorite, Colin Kaepernick, who was back on the field this weekend playing some flag football at Robert Quavo's second annual Huncho Day.
Mm.
Cap had the play of the day with his 2-point conversion pass to Quavo, and the NFL's Instagram page, even posted a pic of this highlight, but left Cap out of it and had no mention of him. Guys, is this a shot at Cap?
No, I think it's a recognition. I think this was over IG.
Mm-hmm.
Quavo's got 12 million followers. Cap has 3 million. Quavo made a bad pass, a good pass.
Come on, Whit.
Oh, my God.
That was a good throw.
It ain't no coincidence that he's not in the picture. That I do know.
It ain't
a coincidence.
Ain't a coincidence.
Ain't no coincidences. I don't believe in it.
It's not. You don't believe in coincidence?
Even though it's good they're showing Quavo some love for the day and what he's doing for the city of Atlanta. It's definitely a coincidence.
Calculated for sure.
Yeah, it's a shot. You think it's a shot?
It's definitely a shot.
I'm not so...
Because if you look at Quavo page and all the other social media that's been showing highlights of this game, Cap is in all
He's in all of it.
And he's really on everybody's page that's played in the game.
Yeah.
So if you look at it, it's got
to
be a shot.
You know it was a bad pass to Saquon Barkley. But anyway, go ahead.
Look, Cap is there because it's a charity event. The league understands this. Look, we're in one business. You said, yeah, Quavo has 12 million followers. You know what? Let's follow him. We're out on Cap. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is what it is. We're going to promote what we want to promote, and you can't tell us
and
that we're
not polarizing. Kaepernick is polarizing for NFL fans. They're staying on brand. All right, Darnell, next.
Yes, sir. Moving on to the hottest rapper out right now, Le'Veon Bell, who posted a clip of his new song with the caption, "Are you ready? Fire or trash?" Well, Chargers wideout Keenan Allen kept it real with Bell, tweeting, "I got to keep it a band, bro. This ain't it. Trash." Le'Veon responded, calling Allen a troll and saying that he could have just texted him. Keenan ended the discussion saying, "I don't troll. Like I said, I speak facts. You shouldn't have asked me and want the truth." Fellas, do you like Keenan's honesty here?
Yes!
What you mean?
You kidding me?
You can't say you real and can't accept the real.
Yeah!
Ask for it, Stack.
And you gonna ask for it on this platform and expect me to go, "No, let me text you that." No, you put it out there on this platform. Like, I'm gonna respond on this platform.
By the way, your stuff is weak. I don't know if you noticed, but I didn't want to say it in front of everybody else. But
you should text me. If you want my opinion through a text, you text me. "Hey, man, Keenan, what you think of my mind?" Then I'll text you back. Right. I'm not going to tweet it back.
Right. Yeah, have y'all ever seen me come on the show? "What do you think of my new hairstyle?" In private, right. Away from the camera. Right. I'm not going to do that on camera. Keenan Allen he gained a follower and a fan.
Ooh-wee.
In me. It's so weird.
Hey, keep it real.
He needs to be on this show. I love this brother. He's going to keep it 100, 100, 100.
Yes, he
did. Keep it off to Le'Veon Bell all over that. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yes, man. We're going to talk about the GOAT, Tom Brady, who jokingly announced his retirement yesterday for April Fool's Day, saying, quote, "I'm retiring. In my spare time, I'll be tweeting." But the bigger story here is the fact that Tom actually joined the Twitterverse. Dante Stallworth had a funny response to this saying, "Welcome to hell, Tom Brady." Do y'all think Brady will regret joining Twitter?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And look, I'm on Twitter all the time, but I regret it every day.
You love it, man.
Well, then you don't regret it every day.
Yes,
you
tweet more than me.
It's like Dante Stallworth said, man. Welcome to hell.
What's the difference between Twitter and Instagram? It's the same thing to me.
No. Instagram got more positive energy than Twitter.
What?
No way.
This positive is, energy?
This way.
Is why I'm like,
negative energy on Twitter.
It's the same thing.
It's not going to matter. If people love you, they're going to show you love. If they want to hate, they're going to show you.
Whether it's on Twitter, Snapchat, it whatever, they're going to hate on all of them.
Tom Brady going to be all right.
They're going to hate on all of them.
He's not running. He's not back there saying, "Let me send this tweet." No, you got people for that, man.
I guess I only look at IG models, so I see.
That's negativity.
That ain't.
No, that's positive.
That's positive.
I literally thought IG was more positive than Twitter. It's not.
No, it's not. No. And
absolutely not.
They can be negative with pictures on IG.
Yeah.
They can be negative. A visual hate. It's right. Visual hate.
Well, good luck, Tom. I followed him yesterday when he joined. Me and 300,000 other people. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, move on to one of your favorite shows, Game of Thrones.
Mm.
Los Angeles Chargers defensive end Joey Bosa is scheduled to make a cameo appearance in an upcoming episode of the show's final season. This isn't the first celebrity to make an appearance on the show. New York Mets pitcher Noah Syndergaard also had a cameo, as well as singer Ed Sheeran. Guys, what show would you guys like to make an appearance on?
See those names? Ain't none of them brothers.
Nah, they don't got black people on that show.
We just watching
The
Shy.
Hey,
I was just thinking about that. I was like, do they have any black people on Game of Thrones? I can't think of one.
I don't know because I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Me either.
I watch it and
Snowfall.
Big problem with Game of Thrones is like all the black dudes on there are eunuchs. I'll explain that off air.
Yeah. Half horse, half human.
No.
Worse?
They're missing their most important part.
Oh, no. Brothers aren't watching that.
No, we're definitely not watching that show.
But again, the question what show would you like to be on?
Snowfall.
Snowfall.
That's my type of show.
Ooh, right. Snowfall.
Me,
it's,
or The Shy.
It's not a show, it's a movie. I would love to have a shot at Black Panther.
Ooh, I want to be on Power. I like Power.
Yeah.
Power would be a dope show to be on.
You fit Power good. Yeah.
You don't like Power?
I love Power.
You don't rock with Power?
Big Rich Stone.
Snowfall is much better than Power.
Yes.
Power's like a bad version of The Wire.
I wouldn't say
man.
Better. They both good to me. Yeah, both
Power.
Good.
Oh, I watched The Wire.
Power 5.
Yeah, 5. Yeah, I watched
all
The Wire.
Power 5.
Power,
yes,
Wire.
Sir. Thank you.
Power now, what would you want to be on? Yeah. Power.
Power's fire.
Power. Man, when the white dude told his girlfriend all of their business in two Tommy. Or 3 days, that's when I was like, and this was like in the first 5 or 6 episodes, I was like, man, I can't watch
this. Hey, man, you know what a woman do to a man? A woman can get anything out, man, if she worked the right thing.
Right.
I'm trying to tell you.
What show would you want to be on, Darnell?
Yeah. Reggie Bush kind of stole mine, man. Power is my favorite show on television.
Power, really? Bro.
It's, I'm telling you, it's, well, I give it a second chance. I'm telling you, I wouldn't lie to you.
The Chi, all that good stuff on TV?
The Chi pretty good, too.
My favorite show on TV is going on right now on FS1.
Right now.
Yeah, I want to be
speak
on
it.
Show.
Speak on it.
Speak for yourself. All right, let's get to the question of the day, Darnell. Take it over.
All right, fellas, so multiple celebrities and athletes expressed their condolences for the tragic death of Grammy-nominated rapper Nipsey Hussle. As you all know, Hussle was murdered Sunday in a neighborhood which he grew up in. You know, people showed their support for Nipsey with Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams getting customized Hussle jerseys. So my question is, what can we do to reduce violence in the black community?
Wow. That's a tough question.
Wow.
How much time we got?
Yeah.
We got seriously. A little time. We got a little time. I'm gonna let Reggie start us off.
This is such a deep question, man. And honestly, I'm so thankful that Fox would take this leap of faith to even allow us to talk about this, because the only way I feel like things can change is if we have conversations like this with the platform like this. But I will speak to my personal upbringing. My real dad was not in my life growing up. And so the foundation of why I wanted to be so great in the football field was because I wanted I wanted to make my dad jealous, right? And I had this resentment and this aggression that I grew up with towards my real dad. And as I got older, I realized my dad never had his dad in his life. And I just posted something about this on Instagram the other day. And my dad met his dad for the first time 5 years ago. My dad's 53 years old. And my grandfather, my biological grandfather, who I still have never met to this day, has lived in LA this whole time. And so to me, we got to get back to the foundation at home with the parenting. And a lot of my boys I grew up with didn't have their dads. A lot of guys that I knew in the NFL that I played with didn't have their dads growing up. So for me, I learned from a lot of the men through football, right? Football ultimately became that father for me, because that was where there were other men there. Now, the issue with that was that I'm learning from other men that are just as broken as me, right? And so I think a good start is getting back to the foundation of where kids are young and making them understand that, listen, just because you have a tough upbringing doesn't mean you can't go on to be successful. And I think if you start there with the parenting, because not having a man in your life to show you how to be a man, that has significant effects. And a lot of those effects have stuck with me up until my relationship with my kids and my wife.
Greg?
For me, it comes down to faith. I'm a man of faith, and I truly believe that if you're not standing for something, you'll fall for anything. Mm-hmm. And a fool finds pleasure in not understanding. And it finds no pleasure in understanding. And it finds all the pleasure in just their own opinions and their actions and emotions. And for me, I had a dad. I had a mom. I had the nurturing on both sides. So I know what it looked like. Mm-hmm. And for these things to stop, we have to have a change of heart. There has to be something that we come into agreement with that shifts us in saying, you know what? Just like Nipsey, there was something that hit him, that jolted him, that was like, you know what? I don't want to gang bang no more. I want to use what I did and show these young people in my hood, in my neighborhood, that you don't have to do it the way I did it.
Yeah.
There is a different way, and I'm going to help you see that we can put it around you every single day. Mm-hmm. It has to be a heart change.
I agree with you and Reggie both. It starts with family and faith, or faith and family. And we need more of that. And if you don't restore the family, it's hard to correct any problem. It's hard to produce anything positive. Steve?
Being in certain situations is... It's hard to come up with all the answers, but coming up without anything, it's kind of hard to give somebody that answer to stay positive and to say you need to do this to make it mm-hmm. when all the odds are against you. So if we can't solve so many people not having anything, mm-hmm. then it's gonna always, it's poverty, definitely. It's gonna always be problems like that. Another thing, just jealousy and hate. Like, how can you erase that when you have so many people, the crab in the bucket mentality?
Yes.
Don't wanna see you with it.
Yep.
It's a certain situation they always say, you successful, you stay away from home, but as soon as you go home, you always get murdered. And it happens like that a lot because it's somebody there that sees you, that grew up with you, grew up the same way you grew up, mm-hmm. the same circumstances, but some type of way you had a little luck or God blessed you a different way that didn't bless them. So they feel like, okay, well, why did he deserve it? So if I see him right now, I'm jealous of him. Let me take what he got because I'm just that mad at my life mm-hmm. and the way things are going on in my life, why I didn't get those same opportunities. It's just jealous and hate in our communities that you can it's impossible to erase.
You just hit on the conundrum. When you make it from poverty to be wealthy, how do you stay connected to the community you grew up in without putting yourself in harm's way?
It's hard because we always talk about how much we love the hood, but the hood don't love us back.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you have to go back, and I love the hood more than I'm afraid of the hood. Let me say that. So I don't care what goes on in the hood. Nothing can make me not go back because I'm that connected. I love it that much.
Yeah.
I don't care what goes on. My brother died in the hood. My grandmother died there. My dad died there. So I'm going to always go back because I'm not afraid to go back. But at the same time, I don't go back as often because I love my life.
Yes.
I value my life. I value being there for my kids.
And a lot of times it's the people closest to you. It's the people or the place where you feel like they have accepted you the most, right? That end up being the ones that either kill you or try to bring you back down. I'll tell you a quick little story, man. One of my best friends of life ended up stealing $70,000 from me. And just as athletic as me, should have been in the NFL, should be where I'm at today. And to your point, maybe didn't do a couple things right and didn't allow him to get there, right? I'll never forget the day where I got that phone call from my business manager telling me that my best friend, he's looking at 9 checks totaling $70,000. To me, this guy was like, he was my brother. It was not like a brother, he was my brother. His family and my family are still close to this day. And a lot of times, again, it's the people closest to you because you're a constant reminder to them of what they could have been. And that's why I tie that back into my point of growing up and having this resentment towards my dad. When I finally did make it and I finally did make him jealous, I didn't feel better about myself, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't give me that satisfaction like I thought it would have. So I had to really have a deep-rooted conversation with my dad and forgive him and also have him forgive me. And so on top of that, a lot of times, like you said, the hood, as much as you love them, they don't always love you back.
Steven Jackson is back, and we're joined now by NBA champion Matt Barnes. Let's move to the Ball family, who haven't had the greatest month, with reports surfacing that the Big Baller brand on the verge of collapse, and now LeVar might be on the verge of another questionable decision, announcing that his youngest son, LaMelo, will skip college and the G League, opting instead to play overseas until he becomes eligible for the NBA draft. I think there's... LeVar said he didn't want his son playing in the G League against 28, 29-year-olds. I think there's a fear of him getting exposed against real talent. So send him overseas where we won't be paying attention. It won't be on local American TV. And the competition will probably be weaker. So it's probably a smart move. He's protecting his son because they've jacked up his career.
Yeah, I don't like the move because it takes him out of the pool of where the greatest talent is pulled from. College basketball, and you look at your oldest.
He's ruined that. He can't go to college.
I understand that, but he hasn't completely ruled that out. He would have sit out.
No, he's violated all the eligibility rules.
Got it.
Tourism rules.
So I mean, for me, I look at it as Lonzo. This is LeVar really trying to create their own narrative, his own narrative. This is what he did with his son, Lonzo. This is what he does with Big Baller Brand. He wants to control the narrative. He wants to control what his sons do and where they go and where they end up.
Well, if he can't go to college, what other option is there? Second,
G League.
Right. If he don't, but that's what he's doing. He's definitely protecting his son. In the G League, it's some hungry dogs in that G League that's trying to get out of there. And they will embarrass him, and they will challenge him. One thing I noticed about him is he's skilled offensively. But on defense, he has no motor. He has no he's not one of those guys that go hard the whole time. And the G League is not for a guy like that. You want to send your son overseas and make him look better. You can't fault the dad for protecting the son.
I mean, I love the whole first and foremost with how you guys just closed the last step. The fact that he's in their lives, a black father in his lives, can do, you know, helping his sons. But that's where it stops for me, because I think he completely ruined,
yes,
or on the way to ruining two. You know, luckily, Zoe is finally breaking free of his dad and going with his own different shoe brand, covering up the tattoos. But, you know, what he did to his middle son at UCLA, pulling him out of UCLA, yeah, instead of making him sit there and take his punishment for stealing, which we could have been back and playing at UCLA and working towards whatever he was working towards. But then the youngest one, Melo's very talented. Like
very
you
talented.
Said, he's you know, his dad robbed him of his high school experience. So, you know, he, instead of winning a state championship, you know, a couple weeks ago and playing in the McDonald's game last week, he's playing over Lithuania and then this BS JBL league or whatever it's called. So, to me, LeVar is very selfish. I think because he wasn't an athlete and he missed his window, he's vicariously living through his kids, and he wants it like this instead of, you know, let me say crazy stuff to make people dislike my kids and draw attention. I think they had a great idea with the brand overall, but then as soon as they came out with the price points, the whole thing started going downhill from there. You know, you had a chance to capture a unique audience with a reasonable price point, and they could have killed that market, but they put the price point too high, and after that move, everything's been downhill since. So as a father of three sons, I hate the way he moves with his kids, because it's more about him than it is about the boys,
very
and that's
true.
Unfortunate.
I want to be clear. I guess there is a path, a very difficult path, for LaMelo to get qualified to go to college.
That's what I was
saying. You got to remember, he's been pulled out of school.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably violated some amateurism rules or whatever. So I think it's a difficult path. And then if I'm a coach, do I really want to sign up a kid who clearly has no interest in school, who clearly will only be there for the shortest time possible? Then you got to deal with LeVar.
Yeah, right.
And all. It's just a headache. Because, again, Steve Alford, we had him on the program a week ago or so. If LiAngelo doesn't lead those kids in that shoplifting incident in China, Steve Alford perhaps still has his job, because all those kids got suspended for a year. So I just think a lot, he's put this son behind the eight ball
no
in a
question.
Big way.
I think what Matt's hit on is right on the money. He is living vicariously through his sons. And it's because he understands how special his sons are, but he wants to be a part of it. And sometimes being a part of it is being in the
That's
background.
That's the worst fathers. Mm-hmm. That's some of the worst fathers.
Yes, and you're pushing way too hard. Let them just do what they do, and you'll enjoy the ride better that way. But he doesn't want
to
do it.
He wants to be the star.
All right, before we go, I want to tip my hat to Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski. He's drawing criticism from the hot take crowd for allegedly being outcoached in the regional final by Michigan State's Tom Izzo. It's not true. The Spartans won simply because they had more experience. But my praise of Coach K has little to do with Sunday's game. It has to do with what he said before the game. Coach K criticized the NCAA for its lack of vision. He said, "The NCAA is not prepared right now. They need to be in concert with the NBA in developing a plan that is specific for men's college basketball. We should already have a plan. And I think what you do is the NBA has a plan, then we have a plan, and you say, well, do they mesh? Okay, oh, that's pretty good. Your plan, in other words, we work a little bit better than our government, where we don't just sit on both sides of the aisle." Boom. Coach K is dead on here. The Zion Williamson phenomenon proves that the NBA and the NCAA need to work together for the good of basketball. Zion is 18 years old, and he's a bigger star than any 25-year-old or younger player in the NBA, including the Greek Freak and Joel Embiid. 1 year of college hoops transformed Zion into a top 10 basketball brand and the consensus number one pick. College was not a waste of his time, and it also greatly benefited the NBA. Zion is must-see TV in a way that the Greek Freak, Embiid, Luka Doncic, and Ben Simmons are not. Coach K's comments should start a conversation between the NCAA and the NBA on how to financially reward the country's best players under the age of 21 to stay in school. That's what's best for the game of basketball at the collegiate and professional level.
Part of the rush to join the NBA is to start the clock earlier on a player's second contract, which is far more lucrative than his rookie deal. Why not shorten the rookie contract for every year a player stays in college? Why not give a rookie player a one-time signing bonus depending on how many years of college he completed? There are ways to incentivize kids to do the right thing. Good parents have been doing it for years. Coach K is an excellent parent. Guys, it's time to play You Said What? Let's take a look at something all three of you said yesterday about LeBron James that I had a strong reaction to.
Every time somebody killed LeBron, he always rises to the occasion. And I expect him to do that again next year.
I've never seen someone be kicked so much while they're down, especially a superstar. You know what I mean? I think the world has almost waited for this time to, okay, we finally see a real chink in his armor. He couldn't bring the Lakers back to promise, so let's try to bury him while he's down.
We want to focus on this year and what he was unable to accomplish. 8 straight finals for any player in any league is unprecedented.
All right, when I sat back and watched this last night,
it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I was Tony Montana. You ever see Scarface? You need me. I'm the bad guy. You need me. All of you people around here. How y'all gonna sit here and act like LeBron didn't do nothing wrong last year, and y'all all so confident he's gonna come back next year? The man's gonna be 35, and the man looks to me like he likes the bottle, man.
What did he do wrong?
Cut it out.
He was a terrible teammate. He set a poison off of that. They was holding. I watched the segment. Jason McIntyre set y'all up. His teammates called a meeting on him about his body language, and he's not into basketball. This is Hollywood LeBron James. How can y'all be confident?
What you gonna say next year? What you gonna say next year?
What did I say this year? I said at the beginning of this year, this was gonna be a disaster.
I don't think he's blameless by any means. You know, I definitely think he had his hand in some of the demise, but I think overall it's not, like we talked about yesterday, people never account for injuries. You know, without him missing those 18 games, we're not talking about LeBron every single day because these guys are in the mix and they're going to be in the playoffs, you know. But like I said, there were things he needs to work on. Nobody's perfect, you know, but I think everything's under a magnifying glass now because the season was a failure. You're LeBron, you're playing for the Lakers, and then people are worried about what you're doing off the court, which you're completely allowed to do.
But the question is, will he bounce back? Will it be easy? Of course. If he get the right trades, the right people in the summer.
35 next year.
Regardless,
you know
what
age. You know when injuries happen? When you get old.
Regardless what age he is.
When you don't take care of yourself.
He spend more money than we probably make on himself.
He definitely
to be honest,
take care of himself.
He spends over $1 million on his body.
You can't serve two masters, man. You can't be executive director in every movie, every television show.
But you don't understand, like, just because his name's on it doesn't mean he's there to the day-to-day. He could just be the stamp, okay, LeBron's on this and let's keep it. So you don't really know what he's doing in business. I mean, obviously he's acting in Space Jam 2, but the other stuff he's involved in, you don't know to what extent he's involved in. And it's his life. Why can't he?
Is that a hologram?
And he's building a court. He's building a court just as like MJ did on the set of Space Jam to work out while he's shooting. Who else do that while they're shooting a movie?
Was there a hologram when he's hosting the shop? Is that a hologram or is that LeBron?
Oh, that's him there.
Okay. So for me, this is where
are you trying to dim that man light? Stop trying to dim that man light.
I'm not trying to
dim
that man
shine
as much as
you can. Yeah, you are. Because you're talking about...
Okay, this is the first time I'm going to say this to you. You sound like a hater today.
Yeah.
You sound like a hater today.
No, I sound like Tony Montana.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't.
You're talking about his body language. His team had this team meeting about his body language. I mean, we act as though it only affected the teammates, them not being traded. It obviously impacted and affected LeBron as well. Like, he wanted the team to get better. He obviously was signing off on it. He understands what it takes to win. You can't tell me he doesn't. He's won. He continues to win. And so for him, for that trade to not go through, for them to not be able to acquire AD, not only did it affect these guys that were on the trade block, it affects me too,
Greg,
if I'm LeBron.
Greg, you got kids.
I do.
You don't behave the same way as your kids because you're an adult. You got more life experience. On that Lakers team, LeBron is the adult. He shouldn't behave the way the kids.
And what you missed, they didn't call that meeting like me and him would go at LeBron. This was we're going out to eat, right? But say, man, you got to some type of way get back on defense. But I like them shoes. Can I get some? Like, it wasn't a, bro, you tripping. Nah. We responsible.
They're only 23, 24 years old. How they going to challenge
The man that's 34 it's, years
that's
old.
That's why he need to be around veterans. That's why he need to be around some guys he respects, even a coach he respects. That way, that situation so won't even happen.
He needs someone that can stand up, and not necessarily stand up like he's almighty, but just to talk to him, you know, that he
How
respects
How about the man in the
to.
Mirror? What's wrong
but
with the man?
He had an MVP, his numbers MVP season. Right, the same MVP numbers.
Everybody needs a reminder.
Were those MVP numbers? Wait,
so you, are you talking about James' numbers, defense? Are you talking about anybody else?
James Harden's winning. 1 year? He won last year. He,
how many
Chris Paul hadn't
How many finals anybody? James Harden been to? How many LeBron been to consecutively?
Exactly.
I'm losing fingers. I'm losing fingers.
Whitlock and Greg Jennings. Jennings in for Wiley. Uncle Jimmy's here. All right, Jimmy. let's get to your award for the day.
Well, first of all, just based off the fact that we got company today, it would be totally inappropriate to get a big dummy of the day to company. So, therefore, you, the big dummy of the day, just because I respect Mr. Jennings.
There we go. There we go, Jimmy.
That's just out of due respect, yeah.
I heard you had some complaints about my trip to Kansas City.
Oh, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that.
You weren't missed. All right, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Odell Beckham Jr. Quincy and Monica are the basketball version of Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry. The 2019 Cleveland Browns are love and football.
You were alluding to love and basketball. How did that end?
Love and basketball ended well.
Okay. Okay.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, I'm sure you've seen Love and Basketball. What's your take on our Odell Beckham?
As usual, in your true big dummy self,
let him have
the whole thing up.
Let him have it.
This ain't no love and football. What do you say every day? The NFL is a TV show.
Well.
The Cleveland Browns, happy days.
Man, I thought you were going to say good times.
Oh, hell no. The Chiefs is good time. Chiefs is good time. Every time we think we getting out the ghetto, Andy Reid mismanaged the clock. The Browns is happy days.
Huh.
And Baker Mayfield, Arthur Fonzarelli.
Explain a little bit more about this.
Hey, I'm damn sure glad you asked me that, Craig. You know, Baker Mayfield's the coolest kid in football.
Yeah.
You know, he bring everything and everybody together, you know, just with his positivity. Odell can be Ralph Mouth. Jarvis can be Potsy Weber.
I love it.
Freddie Kitchens can be Richie Cunningham. And Baker, of course, is the Fonzie. And everything works. Why? Because of the farm.
No doubt about it.
Now, look here. If the Cleveland Browns didn't have Fonzie, then Jason, you might be right. It might not work. Huh?
That's a lot of pressure on Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
That's a
Baker
lot.
Got this. He got this. He got that same, what we call in France, the marche-moi. You know, he got that same thing Fonzie got. You know, he just snap his finger, pow, and the girls just come running. You know what I'm saying? Remember back in the day? You know, he kissed the ring, you know, pop, pop, bam, hit the jukebox. Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. What a day, what a day. Proving I'll wake with you.
Yeah.
It's just a TV show, like you said. Ain't that what you say all the time?
That is true. That is true. It is just a TV show.
The Browns is nothing but a TV sitcom, bro. And they'll figure everything out in 30 minutes. Ain't that how Happy Days did? Every day at the end of 30 minutes, they had a happy ending. Okay? Then one day, hell, didn't Fonzie go down south and integrate, and didn't they integrate a whites-only diner in 30 minutes? Hell, that had Martin Luther King mad. Huh? So you think Baker can't make Jarvis and Odell get along? Please. Hey, man, this is like Uncle Jimmy back in 1990. At the firelight when I used to DJ down there. Hey, bro, I'm not gonna lie. I know you think it's fantasy, but back in the day, boy, I used to be able to just snap my finger like, pow! And women just come out of nowhere. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, look at
you
it.
You know, they just come. You know what I'm saying?
Check him out. I see you,
Jimmy Fonzarelli. All right. That's pretty good. All right, that's pretty good. All right, let me get to my approval rating for Odell Beckham Jr. I do not approve of Uncle Jimmy. I move Odell down 1 point from a 69 to a 68, keep him the same in job performance, take him up in all-time greatness, move him up in character. I liked the way he's handled this move to Cleveland, bring him down in authenticity. I don't believe the stuff he's saying about he's happy about being out of New York.
For me, job performance, I got him at a 21. He played 12 games. I mean, he produced in those 12 games that he played. Had he had four more games, who knows where he would have ended up. All-time great, 19. Character, this is where he's taken a little bit of a hit. He has an opportunity to restore that. You alluded to it. He's made the transition pretty smooth. Authenticity, he is who he is. 22.
I am 80.
A little high.